captured a lot of deposits. I mean, we have some interesting collaborations, experiments going on with different partners, and one is with Founds, which is a neobank. And that speaks to the point. I mean, when people come into the top of the funnel, we ask them, do you have a business?
Hey, welcome to PayPod, where we bring you conversations with the trailblazers shaping the future of payments and fintech. My name is Kevin Rosenquist. Thanks for listening. Today, I'm talking with Saul Lax, CEO of Revenued, a company that specializes in providing funding solutions tailored for small and medium-sized businesses. The company focuses on helping businesses that might struggle with traditional financing due to lower credit scores. Saul has amazing insights into traditional banking, neobanking, and what the future looks like for the industry overall. I hope you enjoy our conversation, because aside from banking, we also chat about AI, avatar, and even dragons. Please welcome Saul Lax.
Your company, Revenued, recently published a small business banking survey where you surveyed 100 small and medium-sized businesses about their banking habits and the factors influencing their banking decisions. And some interesting stats came out of it. I think the most surprising one to me was that 13% of respondents still actually go to a local physical bank branch. I was like, really?
You thought the number would be smaller than that?
Yes, I don't know the last time I've seen the inside of a bank.
I'm not sure, because the big banks that are still opening up branches, they're obviously the smaller number of branches than they used to be. They must know something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there has to be something about touch points still being relevant for people, show up, or maybe even just a sense of security that I drive past Bank of America, I wave at it, and I go, okay, they must be real, so I'll do my online. I don't know, but I was more surprised at the fact that there were actually more than 50% or so that had a second account, had a second or third bank account, because I thought this stuff is super sticky. And basically, you have your account, there's switching costs, and just who really cares anyway? And you're just going to stick with your bank as long as it has reasonably good digital banking, to your point. So I was surprised actually to find that two or three small businesses. And again, these are small but not teeny, right? They're not sole props. They're generally going to have $20,000 a month, at least in revenue, in bank deposits. And that will go up all the way to, someone doing, let's say, $5 million a year or $6 million a year. So it's not the teeny, large part of small business, which is quite large. But still, that a business that size would have two banking relationships or three banking relationships, even to me, was an eye-opener.
Any idea why that is?
I'm wondering if a lot of these guys have just opened up a neobank relationship to see what it's like, because there was some free product. There was like ARAP, and I'll do my ARAP through that, and it hasn't necessarily captured a lot of deposits. I mean, we have some interesting collaborations, experiments going on with different partners, and one is with Founds, which is a neobank, and that speaks to the point. I mean, when people come into the top of the funnel, we ask them, do you have a business bank account, right? Because that's one of our requirements for doing the business card and FlexLine. And a large number of them say, no, we don't, right? So obviously they're on the smaller side. They don't currently have a business bank account running out of their personal account. And we say, well, would you like one? Would you like us to introduce you to somebody who'll give you one, right? And a large number of them say yes. A large number of them will sign up with Found, for example. Now we have a relationship also with Bluevine. They'll sign up with Bluevine, and they love the fact that it's free, when it comes with some bells and whistles. And then, call it 25 or 35% of those convert into people that actually have a depository relationship, right? After opening it up, that they actually keep what looks like a reasonable amount of money in their account, right? So I don't know how many of the people are answering. I have two or three accounts. Actually, I have two or three live accounts. Similar to the way, someone will say, how many credit cards do you have?
Right.
Right. You might have, I'm sure I have, two credit cards sitting in a drawer that I've never used. Or I haven't used in 10 years.
Yeah, you haven't thought about it or even realized you still have. Yeah.
right? But I think the stuff that came back on the survey was, you know, sort of my joke about diet, you know, calorie free ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Is that largely what came across was this, you know, give me free, no fees, right? Give me a high payout APY, right? Let me earn as much as possible of my money. Let me have some lending products, you know, it's because I obviously have some need for capital. And if you give me those three things, you know, I'm just good, right? No problem, right? And the number of people coming back with, and again, this is not a huge number of responses, it's built on 100 responses, but it does tie in though to another thing that we've sourced, which is much, much more robust data set, which is our hookups to Plaid, of which at this point, you know, there's 15,000 or so, where we've seen a rise in neobanks, and the common denominator in all of them, you know, and this is statistically, I think, significant at this point, people coming to us for capital, like which bank, who are they banking with, right? So obviously the big banks, Bank of America and all the rest, but surprisingly, like Bluefin and guys like that are starting to get traction. Mm-hmm. They're showing up in the lead list, you know, far beyond the amount of, you know, deposits they have, right? They're a teeny bank in the scheme of things, but they're actually ranking in small business, in the small business universe, right? And I think that's just, it's free, right? Mm-hmm. If you get digital banking, and the average, by the way, you totally blow your mind looking at some of the variances in terms of what people are actually paying in bank fees. I mean, there are some small businesses out there that, because they don't know any better, they're not aware, or they're not looking at it every month, are spending upwards of $1,000 a year in fees, right? So there are some people that are paying crazy fees.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's quite a lot. I mean, the average is much lower than that, but still not nothing. You know, it could be $200 or so. And people are looking in, and I think they're starting looking and go like, well, free is free. Why shouldn't I take the free offering, right?
Yeah.
You know, covered by the FDIC, it's the same product, right? It's digital. Like, more to your point, I really need a branch to walk into.
Right.
Right. If I don't need a branch to walk into, and it has a cool interface, which at this point is just the cost of doing business, and is not so complex to engineer, and they're not charging me anything, well, why wouldn't I take that account and switch out of something that costs $200-$300? Right. Or in the case of the outliers who really don't know what they have no idea what they're consuming or you know, spending $1,000. So I think that's inevitable. I think that's a sea change. That's a shift that's just going to have to happen. I think the challenge over there is just that the banks, you know, or the neobanks, how do they make money? Right.
Yeah, that would certainly be the question.
Yeah. Well, you've been interviewing a lot of these people on your side of the table. What do you think the answer is? Like, how do they make money? I can tell you what they've told me, but what do you think? How do you think they make money?
I mean, they have to invest, right?
In what? Like, how do you get money, right? How do you get money out of a small business who went to you because you're giving away your product for free?
Right.
Right. So how do you make money? It seems to be very obvious, right? It seems to be a very basic question. How do you make money?
Yeah.
So I think the answer from most of them is that, you know, we think we could convert 10% of our customer stream, right, to a pay version.
The higher, right? Tier. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for $20 a month, they're going to buy something else from us, right? Better accounting, buy the AP/AR module, you know, maybe some souped-up cash flow analytics. You know, who knows what they're going to buy from us. And that's going to be enough to, you know, float our boat and give us enough P&L that, you know, we could sustain it. And of course, it has to be run out over the course of, you know, 2 million customers or something.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, you've got to get the volume in that scenario for sure.
It's a tough business model. You know, I'm not saying no one's going to make it, but it's tough. And, you know, coming back from the survey is basically small businesses are saying like, hey, I basically like free, give you a lot of free stuff, right? Not much appetite for paying for anything souped up, right? Not detecting any great, like, okay, if you upgrade me to this, then I'm going to pay for that. It's not like the airline saying, like, hey, if you want to actually choose a seat, we're going to charge you an extra $30, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the bank scenario, it's hard to figure what that looks like. And they're trying to figure out some upgrade thing. And I think where it ends up is really, you know, the other thing that they're telling us, which is hey, we need capital, right? And banks are not doing that much of that. And primarily that's where we play, right? Mm-hmm. So we provide capital. And what we do is you know, pretty much, I think, where the whole market is moving to, the industry is moving to it, banks are moving to it, but very, very slowly, you know, creeping along, which is just, you know, new model. You can call it AI. It's machine learning driven, a lot of data, and just underwrite a small business more efficiently and better, and potentially provide capital to people who cannot source capital otherwise, and do it dynamically, do it real time. I think everybody who's going to be in small business banking has to shift to that model. I think that, you know, that's the way that, you know, you can compete. Otherwise, inevitably, I don't see how all small banks who currently have a book of business with small business or in competition with Blue Vines or Novos of the world, who, whether or not they're being sustained by, you know, VC money or otherwise, are offering the same product for free. Right. I don't see how they just stay in place and say, well, we're not going to offer our thing for free because it costs $5 a month to mm-hmm. service this customer. So I'm not giving that away for free without a response. The traditional response to small business has to be, well, I'll lend money to them. I'll take them in as a depositor. There's a spread and there's enough lending business to make a spread and make money. Traditional banking model. And I think banks have to get better at doing that if they're going to respond to the Novos and the Blue Vines of the world. But I think conversely, the Blue Vines and the Novos of the world, Blue Vine is an exception because they're coming from a lender's DNA, are going to have to figure out how to lend to their, you know, neobank small business customer, or else they're not making any money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure they convert them into, you know, the 10% that's going to pay a fee for some souped up version of my bank account.
They're kind of rolling the dice a little bit, hoping that that works, that people do want to upgrade to the paid tier.
Yeah, I mean, I guess depending on how compelling it is.
Yeah.
Look, I think the rebundling is interesting too, because, you know, what we're doing with our marketplace, which is an experiment that my CMO Mike Bang put together, is really saying, you know, in terms of the Swiss knife thing, you know, what are the things does a small business want to buy from you, right? But not the supermarket approach. You know, sort of, I have your data. I have your data because I have all your bank data. I have your data because I've underwritten you already. Now, how can I leverage that and providing you something that I think you actually need at a better price point than you currently are capable of realizing? You know, an analogy to that is not the same thing, of course, but analogy to that is what Jimmy Dimon is doing now at Chase, right? They're popping up now with advertising on your credit card portal. When you log into your credit card, you start to see some targeted advertising, right? Which is like a whole different revenue stream. So,
oh, yeah.
I don't know if people, yeah, I don't know if people, I mean, this is not inside information, it's like the Wall Street Journal, but I also have a Chase card. But you know, this is like, you know, I don't know if people after walking card and get, you know, get out of my face. I'm just the card, you know, I'm just looking at, I'm just interested in looking at my credit card bills last month. I'm not interested in buying anything more.
Right. Right.
From, you know, through your offices. Thank you very much. You know, I already have an Amazon membership. That's not what I expect from you. I don't know if people push back like that or they like it, but you know, that's sort of the next level in the small business space, which is, I have your data, right? I'm not just pushing out any product at you. Can I use that data to figure out what you really need and make it easy for you to switch, right? So just for instance, coming back to what we haven't done yet, but which would be the next stage out, is right now we're just like very passively presenting, you know, Bluevine, for example, right? Next stage out is I can go through everybody's account and say, hey, you know, you spent $300 last year on your banking fees. And I know that. And here's your analysis because, you know, I just helpfully added it all up, you know, and I sent you this nice little detailed report. And in fact, I can show you vis-a-vis other people exactly where you're stacking up. Like, do you like that? Well, if you don't like that, let me introduce you to someone who your $300 would go to zero. Would you like that? You know, click here if you like that or not. So, you know, maybe some people just say, no, you know, I've been married to Chase now for 25 years. Quo, I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Leave me alone, whatever.
Yeah.
But again, a surprisingly large number of people answered the survey saying, like, I'd love to, hear more. And I'm open to switching. And in fact, I already have two banks. So I think if I was a typical banker who their small business book was material to, I would at this point be concerned. I don't think it's immaterial. Well, you look grim. You look worried.
No, I'm not worried. It's just I guess it's interesting. I mean, I was looking at your LinkedIn post and then the report and all that stuff, and I think what I'm interested in with Revenue. So your model's different as far as loaning. So you're kind of basically you're investing in companies at the end of the day.
Is that investment would be an overstatement? It's a typical. It's more like a forward contract, right? It's a typical thing that Shopify and anybody who's doing, you know, revenue-based financing is doing.
Okay.
Which they're telling you, they're saying, look, you know, you can sell some of your future revenue. Well, what's future revenue? It hasn't happened yet. So, like, what if I go out of business tomorrow? Well, gee, then there's no future revenue, right? But I'm willing to buy that, right? And similar, imagine you're a farmer, right? And, you know, you need to get some capital, buy your seed and buy your equipment and whatever. And traditionally, your field has always produced X amount of, you know, bushels of corn every year, right? And you come to me and you go, look, I'll sell you part of my crop, right, going forward in the forward contract. I need the cash now. I need to lock it in also in case there's a bad harvest or something that I don't get hosed and I don't lose the farm, right? So that's typically how this stuff was structured, you know, 102 years ago. That's where it started. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who thought of this first, but somebody said, look, it doesn't have to just be a farmer. Let's look at every last business in the world this way, right? And let's just say, hey, you know, based on these patterns or whatever we could figure out about your business for the last, you know, 20 years or 2 years or 1 year or whatever you have the data for, you know, what do we think that looks like for the next 12 months? And how about you sell me 10% of that, you know, in return for my paying you up front X dollars, right? You can't convert that in your mind into, you know, a loan structure and think of an APR or whatever, but that's not what it is. And one of the key differences is if the revenue doesn't materialize, whoever you sold it to, which in this case would be us, you know, we're on the hook for that. You're not on the hook. So, you know, your next question, I think, is, so what happened to you during COVID?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because you said you're not investing, but you are betting a little bit. You're gambling that they're going to be successful.
Yeah, you're absolutely betting.
Yeah.
You're betting a couple of things. You know, you're betting that, you know, trends continue, right? So obviously that's much more difficult to forecast if you're talking about going out 3 years.
Sure.
Right. The stability of a small business's revenue is hard enough to forecast, you know, 12 months out, let alone, you know, a couple of years. So you have that. And then of course you have, which in our case, you know, fraud is mitigated by the fact that we have to have people's access to people's bank, right? So people's bank accounts are hard to actually, produce. It's hard to make up a bank account from scratch or anything like that. But you certainly have the equivalent of friendly fraud, which is someone says, hey, you know, my business does not look good for the next 6 months, right? And I'd actually would like to retire or just shut it down and sell it to somebody. What's the maximum I could extract tomorrow? And say, like, oh, this guy's revenue, that looks like a good deal. You know, I'll sell them my forward revenues, and then there'll be no forward revenue, right? Or in the case of COVID, it was nobody's fault, but all of a sudden you have this, you know, mass event that shuts down small businesses, and there is no forward revenue for anybody. Like, what do you do then, right?
What did you do?
You know, it's actually a pretty crazy story, but, you know, we're looking at the best and going, like, well, what do we do now? And we pivoted. We ended up doing processing a million plus PPP loans. You know, we just took the platform.
I was actually going to ask if you did PPP loans.
We did that and come back to the fraud thing. I'll tell you about that. We ended up doing like a million PPP processing, a million PPP loans, and doing about $4 billion in PPP.
Wow.
You know, as a vendor for a bank. And it was a crazy ride, of course, because it was all scotch tape. It was all like duct tape together. This is not a platform that was built to do PPP loans. But one thing that we are proud of, we had an excellent anti-fraud team, and we did not fall into the abyss of fraud that many people, fintechs that were doing PPP did. But I will tell you some stuff, which is, you know, it's gotten, you know, infinitely scarier, right? Which again, in the case of where you're doing what we're doing exactly, you have to get into someone's bank account. It's hard to make up bank accounts, right? It's hard to manufacture a fake bank account that has real cash flows, and we have to access it dynamically through Plaid. Like, that stuff is hard to just...
Yeah,
you know,
that's a long right? play right there.
You know, that doesn't happen. You know, no. You get somebody sometimes who says, no, it wasn't really me. It was my cousin who made believe it was me. And, you know, how did he get access? You know, sometimes you get something like that. But you don't actually get, like, a wholesale fake. But, you know, in PPP, well, we did see, which today it would be much harder to catch, right? So at one stage in the PPP, we did require, you know, access to people's banks. But in PPP, what you saw was people were providing driver's licenses. And after a while, you were able to catch that, you know, 50 of them had exact same stock photography, right? The little pictures of Kevin Rosenquist's smiling face that they had ripped off your website. And, you know, going like, hey, there's not 50 Kevins applying all over the country, right? From different companies that are with different names. And, you know, that was an obvious tell. And then you were able to sort of roll it backwards and say, okay, where are these emanating from? And what's the IP address? And, you know, who's the common actor in them? Things like that. You were able to figure out like a fraud map. Today with, you know, with the ChatGPT generated ability for pictures, you know, from scratch and fake personas and everything like that, the ability to have someone who has, you know, what looks like a credible virtual persona and is a real person that someone has cultivated over, you know, 2 years with at very low cost is frighteningly real.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I don't know about you. How many times have you hit up on LinkedIn by a person who does not exist?
I mean, yeah, I would guess they don't exist. If they do, I'm not sure what they're, you know, what they're after. But yeah, I mean, there's some definitely, yeah, a lot of that. I get, yeah, LinkedIn, texts, emails, like all sorts of stuff, yeah.
Okay, so you know, this is just, I'm sorry if I'm diverting from where you were going. But
oh, that's okay.
You know, this I found super interesting, right? So I initially would get something very crude over LinkedIn. Right. If you were looking at the person's profile, it was just like obviously made up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Over the last like 12 months, I started getting, you know, background that actually made sense. Right. It's somebody from this and this company, and they've gone this and this far. And I sent two or three of them to my anti-fraud person. Right. Just as a drill. I said, you know, SM, what do you make of this? Right. And, you know, he comes back to me 20 minutes later. You know, the picture is a model in Slovakia, right? The person at this thing actually looks like that, right? And this thing is off and that thing's off. But, you know, today the ability to go to a chatbot or similar, any one of the multiple ones that you can think of, and I'm sure there's stuff in the dark web now that's you know, been broken, jailbroken and everything, and say like, create a profile for me of somebody who's this, this, and this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
Create a picture. So in this case, S would not even be able to find a real picture of somebody who looks like roughly like this, right? And go reach out on LinkedIn to 200 people, right? Let's say you get like 30 people who say, yeah, sure, okay, right? The rest ignore it or turn it down. And you do that in an automated fashion, like once a week, right? I don't know, you know, you don't want to saturate it or something, right? You know, you're going to get 2,000 connections over a year and a half. Like, who's going to doubt that someone with 2,000 connections who has a real CV, right, that actually makes sense, right, and a picture that you can't find anywhere. So it's not just been taken from someone else who's really gonna, like, you know, potentially if they're messaging you, like they want to have a business conversation, who's gonna right away say like, no, right? That's a totally fake. That's a fake. So the ability to fake stuff, fake documents, fake personas, fake IDs and everything, I think is a huge challenge.
Have you seen any of the AI influencers out there on social media? Some of it, like, I do a double take. I'm like, wow, that's pretty legit. It's pretty, when you start to look at it further, you're like, all right, you could start to see where it's fake. And certainly the people are always beautiful, you know, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing. It's come a long way in a very short time.
I was looking at one of the media magazines or that, whatever, they had an article on should they be using artificial influencers, right? And I think it's a great business case. I mean, there are some of them that have real traction. You basically own it. It's a version of modern slavery without the moral problems, right?
And avatar all of a sudden, slavery.
You got it, avatar slavery. All of a sudden, you got a spokesperson for life, right? Yeah. That is totally locked down. You're not going to get blown out of the water by a scandal, right? Yeah. Unless you manufacture it, right? You can manufacture an artificial scandal with someone else's artificial, right? All right. Unless you purposely do that, right, it's never going to blow up. It's never going to go off message. It's always going to be available, and it's never going to cost more than your creative team behind it.
Yeah,
you know, charge, you know, is required to in salary to do that. Otherwise, you know, we've been playing with influencers with good results. You know, it's been an effective channel, but the higher up you go in terms of the number, of, you know, the audience size and everything, it gets pretty expensive.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. So, you know, the fact that you might have an artificial one that actually has some audience, hey, it's still novel. We're not at the part of the cycle yet where audiences are going like, no, I want that ugly person, right, doing, you know, whatever, because there's authenticity to it versus your beautiful.
I was just going to ask you about the authenticity part, because that's the one thing that I think that, you know, even though we all know somewhere in our brains, everybody knows that influencers are being paid, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they love that product. You know, it's just they're getting paid for it. But if we know it's a bot, does that change somehow subconsciously, you know?
Did you watch Avatar?
The movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see the second one. I saw the first one.
I saw the first one. I tried getting through the second one. I couldn't get through the second one. The first one
I liked the first one. Yeah.
I saw the first one. My wife, we both liked it. Did you like it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Yeah. Was it authentic?
No.
did it grip you for like the 2 hours or so it went on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So look, you know, I think we look towards commercials to some degree to entertain us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly can entertain and inform using an avatar, right? The recommendation piece, I agree with you. I don't think, you know, you're gonna trust the avatar unless you have a hole in your head. But you know, maybe. But the rest,
I mean,
of
maybe.
It,
it's a lot of people with holes in their heads.
I was talking to one of my marketing people yesterday. I was reading, right? They're talking about the number of guys, especially guys, that are hooked at on this point on AI girlfriends.
Yeah. Right?
You read anything about that?
Yeah, I did. I did. There was a company, I can't remember what they were called. They got on pretty early trying to do the AI avatar or the AI girlfriends. Yeah, I mean, first thing I think of is the movie Her. I'm sure you probably saw that, right? That's the first thing I thought of, but I mean.
Okay.
They got into some trouble, though, as I recall. Anyway.
So definitely very scary.
Yeah.
Right. From a societal perspective.
Yeah.
Right.
From a mental health perspective.
Everything. Okay, even though, you know, theoretically it could be good, but who knows? But you definitely see that if there was, I call it the equivalent of a small business girlfriend, a boyfriend, right? be there. Or maybe not, it's a girlfriend, boyfriend. Maybe it's simply an older advisor, right? Who'd pump you up in the morning and go, like when I wake up in the morning, I'm a delegate, Saul, you're a founder. Get out there, conquer the world. I believe in you. And I'd say, like, here's my problem. And they go, well, here's, you know, my advice, or whatever, right? You know, you get
you're good enough, you're smart
like
enough, and doggone
that's
it,
right.
People like you.
you got it. You can get hooked on that stuff, right?
Sure, sure.
So do we think that that's not going to happen? I sort of think that that will happen.
Yeah.
So the application of some of these things, you know, leaving the authenticity piece aside, I think we'll get real traction.
I agree.
It's an interesting question.
I agree. How do you guys use AI in your decision making? Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's sort of a stretch to call it AI versus just good old machine learning. Right. So we're not using LLM stuff, you know, these language models in decisioning. Right. So it's all machine learning, but it is automated models. It's actually, you know, 100+ automated models that are running in tandem that are coming to decisions. And the LLM stuff we are playing with because, you know, we just think that it has huge scope. And certainly in terms of efficiencies, if you can answer basic product questions or take off some of the stress from customer service by having an LLM that's good actually answer stuff. I would say that it's not for the faint of heart. I mean, we were running, not exposed to customers, but we were running like a little like beta, let's try an LLM and see if we can answer the basic questions coming out of our content. And it would have gotten us into a lot of trouble. Just really, you know, I was like, yes, it is free. No, there are no, you know.
You don't have to pay this back.
No, there was no problem. You know, it was just, it was a little tough. But when you look at how do people find us, right? How does somebody find a card? How does somebody find a bank? How does somebody find, you know, a whole host of things? Like, what do you do, right? It's our industry. There's a whole bunch of intermediaries, you know, these affiliate sites. Somebody goes to cards.com. Somebody goes to the points guy. Somebody goes to NAV. Somebody goes to Fundera.
Motley Fool.
Right. Somebody
goes, yeah.
You know, all these yep. things, right? Somebody Nerd goes
Wallet.
To that and goes like, you got it, Nerd Wallet. Somebody
There's
goes
so
to
many.
These things and goes, somebody goes like, okay, what is the best card for whatever, right? And it says, okay, you know, here's the five dimensions you could filter against. Like, you know, introductory offers, APR, how hard is it to get? I don't know, what else do they ask? You know, maybe they give you four dimensions.
Yeah.
That maybe five, right? They don't give you an ability to sort out, you know, 200 dimensions, right?
Right, yeah. And, it's usually rewards, APR,
you know,
and Yeah, I suppose like introductory, yeah, if there's any introductory offer or matching balance or matching first balance or whatever it is or something like that.
Let's say you want to ask it something a little more complicated. You want to say like, you know, I need a balance transfer of $5,000 and I want a lower APR, but I also need, you know, because I do a lot of traveling, I also need like good travel, whatever, and I need no foreign exchange fees. Or whatever, you know, you can't ask it that.
Yeah.
You start reading the fine print and everything, right? And if you go to a chatbot and it goes to the primary sites, it's just going to kill the whole affiliates, right? It can answer whatever complex question you want to put to it. Right now, for whatever reason, they're not doing that, right? Meaning they are going to the intermediate sites to pull their answer. Like if you go to a chatbot and say, you know, asking something like that, that will go to all the sites you just mentioned and say, you know, oh, it says on NerdWallet like this. It says on cards.com like that. And it says on forums like this. You know, put together the answer for you.
Yeah.
Now, it does divert traffic away because now I may not bother going to those underlying sites, but still going to those underlying sites. There really is no technical reason that they cannot go to what sits behind those sites, right? They go directly to 1,000 credit card companies and all the banks in America and the Federal Reserve and everything else that they want to pull information from and answer your questions cogently and in a better way than any affiliate site can. Right. So there you got billions of dollars of revenue vaporizing, and potentially with better customer experience. And also, frankly, like a larger opportunity for large banks or anybody who has the real financial information already that enables them to answer the question more appropriately, right? Do you have a whole layer then that could be a little advisory? Like, you know, if I'm Chase or somebody and I actually own a good part of your financial life and I understand your financial information, you want to ask a question like that, you know, you may not bother going to NerdWallet if Chase can produce that in their chatbots. Right. So I think that's probably a very large sea change. That's going to roll out across a lot of verticals. But you know, the vertical that concerns me most is obviously what we do.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Well, you guys work with a lot of you say underserved businesses.
It's FICO below 680.
Okay.
If the owner has a FICO below, I mean, we'll do above as well. You know, probably a third of our customers have, you know, prime FICO scores, and they're coming to us not so much for the card as much as for the Flex Line product.
Is it?
Because the capacity that we'll give them is generally going to be much higher based on their forward revenue numbers versus what they would get from, you know, Chase or somebody. But the two thirds that are below that are simply unbankable. Meaning, if you have below 680 FICO score, traditionally the way a business card company or a line of credit company, which the very few line of credit companies left alive, but you know the way they'll underwrite you is they'll say, like, Kevin, what's your FICO score? And you're going, well, I got a 780, right? And they go, oh, wonderful, right? And you know, we'll give you some money if you go to Kevin the second, and he says, well, you know, I got a 660 because when I started my business, you know, I put everything on my credit card and I had to juggle stuff and everything. By the way, I'm running a pretty good business now, but you know, I haven't built back my credit yet. We'll say, well, you know, come back to us when you got a 780 FICO score. We don't really do much at 660. In fact, we do nothing at 660, right? That's because underwriting for small businesses is still stuck in, you know, you are your FICO or you are your real estate, right? They'll do a real estate loan. If you have hard assets that can secure a loan, they'll do that. They'll do a loan. But there has never really been an option to holistically look at a small business, primarily as cash flows and similar, and say, well, what is the business going to do? And the pioneers in that, you know, OnDeck, Cabbage, Bluevine, part MCA industry, I'm probably leaving out somebody there. You know, they all took the same premise, which is, first of all, I can eliminate a lot of friction by doing that type of underwriting because I can digitally collect a lot of the information. And second, I can expand the box or in some cases restrict the box, right? Somebody might have, you know, a really nice FICO score, but an awful business that's failing, right? Which you would see in the bank accounts. But primarily, they were looking to expand the credit box and saying, well, let's forget about you for a second. Let's think of it from the prism of just the business. You know, the example of the farm, right? You know, if we're looking at how do I think your crop's going to do? Well, your crop is going to exist, you know, even assuming that the farmer, you know, sells it or passes away and his kid takes over, right? You know, the farm produces X as long as somebody's working it, right? And in a business, you might look at it and say, will abstract the owner. Now, of course, in a small business, that's hard to do. A lot of small businesses, the owner walks out the door, don't exist. But assuming steady state, then I forget about your personal credit. You know, what does that look like? And that answers a different sort of question, which enables a different credit person, which opens up the box to doing something with not everybody below a 680, but, you know, call it 30% of people below a 680. So, yeah, it's interesting.
So you're basically looking at it like, okay, these guys might have struggled in the beginning, you know, because they were trying to get off the ground, but they're doing really well now. They've got a good business model. They're fighting back. So it's a good bet to bet on these guys. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, except it's not, you know, that makes it sound noble and emotional around like that, but that's like, you know, and it's a banking movie and I'm going like, Kevin, I believe in you. I know you struggled getting up and running, and you know we're gonna. It's really
the inspiring music, and
yeah, I would love to do the promo that way. You know, we could walk down. You know, we'd be looking at the field, and I go, "Okay, Kevin, I believe in you." And actually,
we'll get
and
out
actually,
there.
Yeah, it would make a good promo, but poor reality show. So the reality of it is just like it's master of it, and it's a bunch of guys above my pay scale. You know, they may report to me because I'm running the business, but you know, the quants who are doing this are busy going, like, okay, you know, based on this last 10,000 deals that we did, you know, what do you see? Like, you know, this morning I got good news from the president of the company, John Dime. He said, oh, you know, I think we can get another 10% out of the model, you know, basically by incorporating, you know, we haven't refreshed it in more than 12 months. Right? Just the refresh, it's going to give us 10% more efficiency, right? He hasn't spoken to that merchant. He has no idea, you know, if that merchant has now turned it around or not. You know, it's numbers driven. That's the reality of it. The reality of it is as data advances and as the ability to do stuff with data advances, in some ways it's a better world, in some ways it's a scarier world. The odds of that guy saying, Kevin, I believe in you, you know, is gonna get diminished because he's looking at a model and it says, like, Kevin looks like a good guy, but do not give him the money. Right? Wow.
He's very nice, but he's not good with money.
He's very nice, but you're not giving the money, right? So the model is going to say something like that, and that's modeling bank is going to say, you know, I'll take you out for a beer, but no money. So you know,
at least they got a beer out of it.
Yeah, we're moving away from the emotional, you know, trust gut decision on credit, into a more quantifiable, just you know, as a probability, as you said, you're betting, right? As a probability bet. You know, if you do this 10,000 times, you know, is it going to work or is it not going to work? That's sort of where we've moved to. We moved to a long time ago, and personal credit card stuff is not driven by emotional, like I trust you or I don't trust you, right?
Mm-hmm. Or it doesn't matter, you know, what race you are, what gender you are, anything like that.
There's enough stats out there. You know, the credit card models are not, they don't see you. They don't care. They don't care who you are. You're a mathematical abstraction to them.
Mm-hmm. You're a data point, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. You're a data point. That's all you want.
Well, that's depressing. No, I'm just kidding.
you're in the matrix. You might be a cool data point, though, right? That's what you hope for.
You just hope you're Neil. That's all you can say.
Yeah. Nobody's cooler than him. Come on.
Yeah. Right. As far as like the it can be very risky, obviously, working with people with less credit, with worse credit, I should say. Do the data points and all that, have they been successful? I mean, do you get burned much, or have you been pretty good at predicting?
Of course. Well, would I admit to it if I get burned much? Come on. This is a podcast. My board's gonna listen to this.
Listen, I just wanted to see how far I could take
it. Come on. You thought you were gonna catch me? Yeah, of course you get burned.
Yeah.
You know, you only stay in business if you get really good at credit, right? It's sort of the naive, you know, VC. I like to call it the West Coast, East Coast. You know, we say like we're an East Coast shop, right? The really naive, you know, go fast and break stuff does not work in credit, right? Because generally what you break is yourself, right? Because it's all levered. And if you make a lot of mistakes in credit, you may not have the room to recover, right? So it's more like judiciously pushing ore out. You know, it's like, think of it, the guys who went to sea back in the day when there'd be dragons there, right? You were creeping out each time, right? You looked at the map, there are pictures of dragons, and you go like, how far can I go out without getting eaten, right? And each time you go out that far, and then you go like, oh, good, the dragon didn't grab me. I probably can go out another, like, you know, 5 miles next time, right? And, you know, there aren't too many guys who take the big, like, not that he didn't in reality, we take the big Columbus leap and go like, hey, let me give out, you know, $1 billion to people with, you know, 680 and below FICO scores. Now let's just try this thing and it's going to work, right? There's going to be land on the other side. It generally doesn't work that way. It's more like, you know, you judiciously keep on pushing out stuff. You take a certain amount of money you're willing to risk, and then you see, you know, if this work, there's a break.
What's so, What's on the horizon that you can talk about for revenue? Do you guys have any changes? Do you have any? I mean, you did talk about maybe messing around with the large language models a little bit. Anything else?
Large language models is interesting. Basically extending the product set. We're really doing some experimentation and thinking about, you know, what is the beginner's product look like? Right now, we're saying no to call it 60% of the applicants, 50% of the applicants, because, you know, they don't have enough revenue. And we're thinking like, oh, you know, if they have less than 10,000 a month right now, we say no to them. What would a product that works fit? You know, what would that look like? What would it cost? Would it be good for them? How do we make money off of it? You know, we're sort of noodling around that stuff and playing with that. So the marketplace is the first thing, which is just like, well, if we offer you stuff that you really need, you know, what's the demand for that? And if we do it in a smart way where we look at your bank accounts and we say, hey, you know, you can actually save money by switching to this stuff. Are you interested in that? If we give you some insight that you didn't have beforehand that we have because we got smart at looking at, you know, your data,
mm-hmm.
and we reflected back to you, do you say like, oh, that's really good, let me use that? So that's sort of the direction that we're moving in. The LLM stuff, probably used internally first for customer service and that. And then, you know, do we go after this big idea that we discussed, which is, you know, do we have the Sol bot answering all your questions about your small business, waking up in the morning and saying, go get it, Kevin. And, you know, advising you on your small business and totally, you know, disrupting all the funderas of the world. You know, do we go in that direction? Yeah, maybe. It's not our day-to-day right now, right? But, you know, is it a possibility out there? Sure, I think someone will do it. You know, we're positioned
someone will definitely
because of
do
data.
It.
Somebody will do it. Yeah, I got you excited, man. Now you think we're living in Avatar.
Yes, right. Aaron, that's right. We're going to be living in Avatar. I want, Yep, I can. You can use my likeness, I'll charge you for it.
You got it. Well it's
Sol Lax with the company is Revenued. Thank you very much for joining me. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
My pleasure. I did as well.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Have a good one. Yeah. Take care. Bye bye.